You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 23 June. We've got U.S. existing home sales data due 4 p.m. our time. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunsa Sanlam, a private wealth. U.S. tax, Iran, oil up, risks left, right and center. Perhaps more than that is uncertainty. And then I want to go back a bit. Last week, we saw SARS stating $57 billion of two-pot withdrawals. Good April retail data. Is there value in SA retail? It's been selling down since around October of last year. OP Ramasimisa, he's head of client solutions for corporate ABSA CIB, Africa's renewable energy sector challenges and solutions. And then Dr. Mishtek Mutuzi, he's a postdoctoral researcher. How African sovereign debt is being mispriced. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. We buy cars considering selling new vehicles. Said it has been approached by some motor manufacturers to sell their products. Business Day, AngloGold Ashanti's New York party set for further boost. Stocks inclusion in Russell 3000 index is expected to generate more interest. Morning markets. The U.S. was red on Friday. We had S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ off 0.4%. Quick look at the 10-year is 4.397%. East is red. Sydney down to 0.2%. Tokyo down 0.6%. Hong Kong off a 0.1%. And Tencent down 0.8%. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures is red, 3,377. Brent is 78.55. Platinum is red at 1,272. And palladium a little higher at 1,050. The rand is 18.06. Bitcoin, $1,002.200. And we've got top 40 opening. Looking for a red open, 480 points or 0.55% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunsa Sanlam, private wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. The attacks over the weekend by the U.S. on Iranian nuclear sites. I suppose the key thing is oil is higher. It just brings more uncertainty into a year that has been absolutely full of it. And I got to say, I thought there might be a bigger response by oil, but at this point, it's certainly edging higher, but Brent's still sub 80. Your take on this, is this just more head scratch as we've seen for a lot of 2025 so far?
Yeah, morning, Simon. The short answer is it's so difficult to know what happens from one day to the next, because under the Trump administration, under the sort of global events we've seen, certainly since the start of 2025, the last 24 hours doesn't mean what's going to happen in the next 24 hours. Such as the news flow and the fluid movement of this change. But at first glance, when I saw the news break, you can get an indication, Middle East markets are open on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Looked like the S&P futures are down, over 1.5%, 2%. Oil was up 5%. A little bit of settling, I think, as the news is digested. And it doesn't look – I also share your thoughts. I thought it would be far worse off. Oil up, currently down about 1.8% on Brent. It's not a massive move. So I think it's just changing from one day to the next. Overall, although this certainly ratchets up the risk sort of profiles across the board for assets. And I think you've got to tread very carefully from one day to the next.
And I'm going to quote you back. I think I've been quoting you back now a second time this year from way back in January when Trump did those first tariffs. And your response was then, yes, it's not nice. Yes, it's ratcheting up tensions. But, it's still a case of, don't panic. It's tough out there, but the best thing we can do is probably go for a walk.
It's difficult sometimes, especially now in this real-time world we live in with social media and all the rest of it, to try to filter out some of the noise.
Yeah.
But these are cycles. These things pass. And one thing that is quite consistent with the history with escalations and conflicts and that is they do pass.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe this what we're seeing in risk assets right now is is a world where things react far more quickly. You know, the drawdowns are shorter, the rallies are shorter, and you've just got to pick it. But it doesn't mean that we're out the woods just yet. And it's actually a little bit of a lull at the moment too, before we head into earnings season as well. So Markets are a little bit looking for any sort of news in this vacuum right now.
Yeah, that's a fair point as well. Something to sort of latch on to. To quickly change track, go back to last week, we had SARS Commissioner saying 57 billion of two-pot withdrawals, and that's a little below what expectations were, but still a big number. We saw good April retail data. That might be because Easter was in March last year. But, I mean, we've seen SA retail stocks sort of under pressure since late last year. Is there some value creeping in there at some point?
Yeah, I actually do think so. I mean, I thought the South African consumers been relatively resilient. I mean, notwithstanding obviously the two pots that you pointed out and a few other things, but overall, I mean, I thought the numbers have been pretty decent. And here's our job, Simon. As you know, sometimes look for inefficiencies in prices. And I think these retail shares look a little bit overdone to the downside. I don't think they're reflecting that the consumers maybe not as bad as we think. I mean, you know, inflation is still 3.2% odd thereabouts. I think last month. So, you know, not massively historically high inflation for South Africa. What we do need, though, and if they are listening in Pretoria, the SARB, we've got to have lower rates. I mean, we can't keep ticking along here with these interest rates where they are, and real rates sitting at over 4%. It's not going to help anyone. But if we do see a tick down in those rates, some of these retail shares, I mean, Mr. Price down almost 30% year to date. True is down 30%. Woolies down 15%. I could go on. I don't think they're reflecting a consumer that's looking okay. And a little cut in rates here would certainly help on these statistics.
Yeah, a little cut. Minister, I'm sure you are a listener. Sorry, Governor, not the Minister. We need those rates to be coming down. We'll leave it there. Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today. Are you feeling better off as a South African consumer than a year ago? I suppose in many senses it is relative, right? But I mean, still, is it feeling a little better than it was last year? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Opie Ramamirisa. He's Head of Client Solutions for SA Corporates at Absa CIB. Opie, appreciate the time today. Africa's renewable energy story, it's kind of a bit of a paradox. On the one side, there's demand, there's potential, there's momentum. On the other side, it's sort of perceived and actual risks that are perhaps stalling the process. What are some of the sort of more common risks that investors are looking at when they look at their African renewable energy projects?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. And some of the major risks which we encounter when we engage with our clients as APSA is, things like offtake uncertainty, regulatory, delays, some construction challenges, and in some instances, political transitions and political risk. But from a market, perspective, one of the big, risks which we encounter, especially from someone like myself who works in risk management, is how do we help clients with, currency volatility and particularly depreciation, because that's a major, concern for investors into this environment. And another risk which, always comes up in terms of what investors essentially, want from us is how can we help them with currency, convertibility. So what we mean by currency convertibility is how freely is one, currency exchangeable in the global, markets from one currency into another. And part of that, what causes that is essentially the, the exchange control restrictions amongst other factors, which essentially creates that illiquidity in those markets. So that, for us is one of the major, risks which we try and help solve and hopefully enable more investment into this environment.
It almost sounds like these are, in many cases, you need bespoke African solutions because, yes, there are, hedging and risk instruments are not new to the planet Earth, but what you're talking about, I mean, just to take one randomly, I mean, exchange controls, regime changes are perhaps a little more unique, and you need unique products for it almost.
That is very true. And what we find is your normal, you know, call it hedging products for argument's sake, you know, things like forwards, swap contracts mm-hmm. and the likes and other derivatives, they exist, but in some instances are not necessarily, you know, call it applicable in some environments which we operate in. And some of those issues which we encounter and why those products don't work is because of maybe, you know, the shallow capital and derivative markets, mm-hmm. things like the tenor, which we take for granted, even in the markets like South Africa, where we find we've got very deep liquid derivative markets and you can do much with derivative products and risk management, you know, opportunities which are there, and we're able to assist, you know, some of our clients. Some of those instruments are not necessarily, you know, viable in those markets, which we see opportunities and we see that, you know, we can try and help bring in investments to develop the renewable energy markets in the African continent.
And it also then sounds that this is something where you and your colleagues at APSA CIB would kind of be in the process pretty much from day one, just to help and get it to that bankability and ultimately to producing power, but sort of starting at the beginning of the process rather than coming in alongside at some point.
That's very true. I mean, we are there to, I mean, I guess, you know, from helping these clients, you know, procure, call it concessionary, you know, loans, because, you know, in the initial, you know, stages of some of these projects, you need, call it patient type of capital, essentially, or capital, which allows, you know, to take on some of that risk before, you know, some of your more institutional, you know, investors, you know, coming in. And they would want to come in once, you know, some of these projects are already in operation and producing cash flows, you know. So we're there at the onset, you know, working with these developers with their PPAs and the likes. And what we're essentially doing in that is to try, how do we bridge that gap and bring in that kind of capital, which can get the projects off the ground, and hopefully when we're in a position where, you know, there is less risk, we are able to then bring in that additional capital.
You're at the Africa Energy Forum at the moment down in Cape Town. I mean, it's the sense at the forum there that things are moving in the right direction, because, I mean, I said up front, there certainly is demand, there's potential, there's momentum. Is there a sense that things are moving in the right direction and it's going to be a good year, five, decade ahead for the continent in terms of renewable energy?
Yes, I mean, we've been meeting with, you know, some ministers from across the continent. There is indeed excitement. I mean, Africa, the continent, you know, offers a lot of opportunity for investors, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you're happy to take some of that risk. But we're seeing the buzz. I mean, you know, Africa Energy Forum, which is held every year, in most cases, you know, we have it across Europe where we make it easier for some of those global investors mm-hmm. to come in. But this year, we're here in Cape Town, and we're seeing a lot of our clients, you know, having flown down, because some of them are global in nature, and they're enjoying and engaging with us in terms of how can we as APSA, you know, CIB, help in bridging that gap in terms of, you know, identifying some of the opportunities. Can we, you know, support them? So there's a lot of, you know, work which has been done. And I think the goal which, call it, the African Union has set for renewable energy, you know, by 2030 is definitely achievable, because I think that funding gap which exists, I think there is definitely, you know, appetite for it out there.
Yeah, and patently chatting with you, there are solutions so we can get to those goals, as you say, 5 years away. We'll leave it there. That's Opie Ramarisa. He's head of Client Solutions, SA Corporate, APSA CIB. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Dr. Mashik Mtuzi. He's a postdoctoral researcher at the Graduate School of Business at the University of Cape Town. Mashik, appreciate the time today. You wrote a great piece recently around African bonds and how they are substantially mispriced, and the mispricing resulting in, frankly, higher yields. Can you give us some examples of how this mispricing is happening across the continent?
Thanks very much, Simon, for having me. It's a very important conversation that I think has not been paid attention to over the years. You know, African countries have been issuing bonds quite substantially since around the 2000s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, you know, being a very good option to raise capital alternative to the concessionary funding from the IMF. So what I can say, the mispricing is in all the euro bonds that have issued so far, over 150 billion euro bonds in 21 countries with each one issuing more than two or three Eurobonds. Why I'm saying there's mispricing in all these Eurobonds is because all of them are oversubscribed. They are oversold or overbought.
Mm.
You know, from simple pricing instances like yourself, to take the conversation in very literal, in a layman's terms, you take your potatoes to the market. The moment you arrive in the market, before you even take them off the truck, all of them are bought.
Yeah.
There's still some more people who are asking for more potatoes. It means that there's a problem with your pricing.
Is this, I mean, because certainly I take your point. I mean, that's the paradox, right? Which there is the demand, but we're not getting the pricing. Is it a lack of capacity or expertise within issuing governments? Is it, I'm going to say, maybe it's a lack of expertise within the buyers of the bonds? I mean, where does the problem sit to your mind?
Well, problems are everywhere, but I think the issue of capacity and understanding Eurobond pricing is at the core of it. And that function should be a very mature function within the framework of what we call the debt management framework.
Mm-hmm.
But you find that in most of our governments, they only have one or two people who are not even experts in bond pricing modeling to be able to engage with the investment banks and the issuing syndicates that actually develop this proposal and pitch the initial public offer. And there is a very disturbing instance that actually I've been pointing out. We have another piece out in a few days,
mm-hmm,
to discuss the role of ministers of finance in the mispricing of bonds. Because we find that the Eurobond syndicates have deliberately bypassed the Ministry of Finance technical experts, which are not very technical to some extent, but they do help in assessing some of these incompetencies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The syndicates engage with ministers directly to close their deals. And the minister, you know, is a political appointee, and in many cases, they are just out to get funding as quick as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because their term is limited, they are not very worried about the issue that these bonds need to be repaid at some point in time. So there are various factors that have contributed to that. And in summing up, there's what I've called a false signal of success, mm-hmm, in bond issuances, where all these oversubscriptions have been characterized as success in issuing bond. You see, but immediately after the bond is issued, they realize that after 6 months, we have to pay a coupon.
Yeah,
then comes the headache again. That's why you find now almost all the new bond issuances are issuances to restructure or to refinance maturing bonds.
I get you. And it's that challenge. You know, the minister wants the money, but truthfully, the country wants the money at the best rate possible. Is it then, I mean, you talk around syndicates, is it around sort of getting them out of that process and getting perhaps structural teams within the governments, within the treasury departments, with much better sort of skill levels to help with this process?
Absolutely. That's my pitch, that we need to develop strong teams that have equal knowledge like the bond issuing syndicates that structure the IPOs or the initial public offers.
Mm-hmm.
Because when someone who is an expert in market intelligence, in bond issuance, in bond pricing and modeling, they will be able to also do their own parallel process to determine what could be the most accurate pricing based on peer-to-peer comparison, mm-hmm, and based on market appetite or even the timing. Because going to the market is not always, you know, free. You can't go to the market every time.
Yeah.
There are times when we know that the markets are tight, the interest rate cycle is on the peak. So let's wait until the interest rate has declined, or let's wait until another wave of investor appetite is resumed. So people like that with such capacities, not only having them in the ministry, but also retaining them, because that's, mm-hmm, one of the challenges that we see consistently. That you have one expert, and after a short period of time, they leave because they are not being paid sufficiently. So if you have those people with such capacities and level of understanding in the ministry, they can engage with the syndicates, the bond issuing syndicates, on objective areas.
Yeah.
And any disagreements can then be leveled by the minister who provides the oversight role, you know, and also pitching this to parliament and to all the high-level engagement, not for the minister to be the one who is involved in these processes.
Sure. But I take your point. I mean, it's around skills. It's around, in many senses, there's a lack of a playing field in terms of the information out there. And that needs to be leveled because, yeah, if you're paying more than you need to, that costs the country down the road. We'll leave it there. That's Dr. Mashik Matuzi. He's a postdoctoral researcher, Graduate School of Business, University of Cape Town. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. On Friday, I was chatting around oil and where it could go as war in the Middle East was entering its second week. As we were chatting with Nick earlier in the show, that got ratcheted up and oil's higher, although perhaps a lot of folks were saying it was going to jump above 80. It didn't. But our question to you was, what's your view on the oil price? Over half said higher. Quarter said impossible to tell. Rest said we'll start to move lower. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, Africa's new credit rating agency.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.